All right, so today's topic is Paul on parenting, basically Paul's teaching in the New Testament. And this is an excerpt from an article by Daniel Zalewski. Like the novel or the sitcom, the picture book records shifts in domestic life. Newspaper burrowing fathers have been replaced by eager, if fumbling, diaper changers. Similarly, the stern disciplinarians of the past in Robert McCloskey books, parents who instruct children not to cry, have largely vanished. The parents in today's stories suffer from the same diminution in authority felt by the parents reading them aloud an hour past bedtime. The typical adult in contemporary picture book is harried and befuddled, scurrying to fulfill a child's wishes and hesitantly drawing the line. So you guys, what are the popular children's books these days?
We have one just like this. It's Froggy, something, something. And it's like, it's time for bed, and Froggy keeps telling his mom things he needs, and okay, Froggy, and all along, she finally passes out at the end, you know,
Froggy. Yeah.
You know, the list of demands never ends. So.
Yeah.
We kind of give commentary on it as we move through it. What should have happened to Froggy right here? See what's happening? Look at what Froggy's mom
is. This is what's happening
to her. She needs to do the changes.
I mean, in contrast, Bedtime for Francis, I remember reading it, and the dad says, I think it's Francis, is he a badger? Mm-hmm. I think he's a badger, but at the very end it says, you need to go to bed or else I'll give you a spanking. Mm-hmm. This is like gold here, right? But you'd never find that in a modern storybook. What are some other popular? So Bedtime for Froggy,
The Seven Silly Eaters. They are a large family, and one by one, the child has only one food that they will eat, and their mom is. Happily accommodates for the first one, then she has seven. like it gets worse and worse and worse. Each child will eat only one food and is not happy otherwise, and so the mother is left to accommodate.
So there's any resolution, like to learn new foods?
No. Well, the children end up trying to make their mom a birthday cake, and they mix up all of their favorite foods into one, and it ends up being her birthday cake. And we actually made it, and it's delicious.
Interesting.
But, so now they all eat the mom's birthday cake instead of their
cake. So they have two foods, so not only do they eat eggs, but also cake.
That's right.
That's progress, right?
That's it.
Okay. Any other popular children's books that you guys?
We also, the kids, our kids love the, is it Bernstein?
Bernstein,
yeah.
Bernstein Bears.
The bear books.
Yeah.
And how like, we went through a phase where like, I'll just make up what the dad should really say. And he's just one of the kids.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think one of our kids' favorite was No David. How about David just being a hellion, getting all kinds of trouble, not getting disciplined? And I mean, even go back to Curious George. I remember my dad reading that to Julia when she was young, and Julia kept on saying he needs a spanking. And my dad's like, oh yeah, he needs a big spanking for this, right? So there's all these people creating mischief, but it is interesting to see how the increasingly, you see how the dads are portrayed as Homer Simpson, mm-hmm. right? That's kind of become the archetype of the father. So, according to this author, how does our culture tend to view parents? And do you agree with this assessment, at least what the author's giving? How does the culture view parents? And you can appeal to pop culture, too. Sometimes that might give us more of an insight. I mean, if you were to look at our culture, it's a little bit different, right? How does the culture tend to view parents in general?
Well, we've definitely moved away from a nuclear family. Mm-hmm. I mean, so culturally, you know, parent, mom can be the mom and the father figure, mm-hmm. or, well, that might be largely some of the case, but
yeah, that's interesting that the mom's a responsible one.
Yeah.
Right, so you look at the Simpsons, right? The mom is the responsible one in the family, the dad's not. Other ways that you might see popular parenting ideas?
I think increasingly parents are like potential oppressors,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that if your child comes to you and tells you that he's actually a girl, the only appropriate response is, why, of course you are, what can I do to facilitate this
yeah.
new magical linking? And anything but that response is oppressive and going to victimize the child and
yeah.
scar them for life and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem like this generation younger than me, with children who are young now, they
mm-hmm.
very much are tiptoeing, trying to make sure that they're not transgressing in the eyes of their friends
mm-hmm.
the way that they're parenting their kids.
Yeah.
Do we give them a gender? Do we dress them in pink and blue? I mean, just
mm-hmm.
things that even 20 years ago, 18 years ago, how old was Julia?
Mm-hmm.
We never considered
yeah.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a gender reveal party? Or is
mm-hmm.
that deciding something without the child
yeah.
having input?
Yeah. Anything else that you guys see?
Often portrayed as idiots who you should not, like, who deserve to be rebelled against
mm-hmm.
because they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, and that was pretty, when I was growing up, I mean, that was basically the message of MTV.
Yeah.
Parents just don't understand,
okay.
you know, rebellion is very fashionable. Yeah, you've been here for 14 years, but living in Blue State, California, like the deep blue part in Burbank, it was, you never yell at your kids, you never discipline your kids, and so you would just see parents always talking to their kids in monotone. Put your hands down. Don't hit. Pick up your toy. I mean, and so it's just like it's very self-controlled. You can't yell. And I remember reading a Wall Street Journal article, and this author went there, and he said, you go to a Manhattan playground, and everybody is talking in monotone to their kid. There's no, Johnny, you stop that. You know, you don't do that. Johnny, stop that now. Put your hands down. Stop choking the kid.
And the kids are all, I mean, I remember where we were, the kids were hellions.
We're just bad kids.
Yeah.
They're just bad kids. That's why it's kind of refreshing to move out to Emporia and hear people yell at their kids. It wasn't a bad thing. But yeah, I think there is, in the long term, it's just, and it's almost like the people who are experts on raising kids aren't the ones who are actually raising kids.
Yeah.
You have a lot of input from advocacy groups. So transgender people who are LGBT people, you know, that community, whatever, who never raises kids, tell you how they should do it, how you should do it. And so, you know, parents just feel like they don't have the authority, that it's wrong for them to exercise it, and that they have to help the child discover themselves. But what are the long-term consequences of this perception of parents?
Child doesn't grow up respecting authority,
mm-hmm.
and that's every level, and from a child being in the household to being on their own is respecting authority, and
mm-hmm.
you know, from work to teachers to
mm-hmm.
law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
we can see that now.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement is kind of treated like,
mm-hmm.
you know, who are you to enforce the law?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah. Instead of showing appreciation,
yeah,
yeah, for law enforcement, yeah, that's good. Other thoughts? Long term, what's this view of parents as bumbling idiots.
Maybe not knowing their place, and so like how the family is ordered so that they are to be under their parents. And so there's the security of knowing that. Well, if it's not set up in that way, then they're always trying to figure things out, or things are out of order.
Yeah.
And so when we have that established, we have that confidence and security going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But as if we don't have that security, that order as a child, then it continues to go to always trying to find our place.
Yeah.
And figure things out.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you're exactly right. I mean, what would the world be like if it's run by kids? I mean, I look at, you know, as a kid, I always watch those Godzilla movies. You know, the older school version, like, that's dubbed in Japanese actors with this dub. Every Godzilla movie, you always have, like, these politicians, these generals who don't know what to do with, you know, Godzilla, or how to help Godzilla take on this Mothra or some other monster. But there's always like these two Japanese kids who are the stowaways who kind of get involved. And so they're having like these high-level discussions, right? And the five-year-old says, well, if we reverse the process, and everyone's like, oh, that's what we need to do. And it works. It's like, what would we do without this five-year-old, right? And that was great fiction as a kid. It's like, yeah, you know, my parents need to listen to me. But you know, the world was run by kids. I mean, there's a movie made by that. It's called Children of the Corn. And it did not turn out well. So, yeah.
Like, what I read about, like, tech companies, like, back in Washington and California and stuff, like, they're so accommodating now to the workers. It kind of makes you wonder if those kids that grew up kind of brats, like you were saying, are now coming to work.
Yes.
And now
seriously,
it's like, well, if you want to play a video game for a couple hours, you know, it makes you feel a little more creative.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I think you kind of bring up an interesting point about just the workforce, you know, dealing with authority. I mean, it's probably easier for them to keep jobs now because otherwise they can't fill slots. But I mean, when you don't have a healthy respect for authority, I mean, it is damaging as far as human flourishing in the future, right? Yeah.
I mean, if you want to see a small version of a world run by kids, go to a classroom that has no classroom management.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And it is, I mean, it's chaos, and then if they go to the next teacher,
describe to us.
Because
you're a junior high teacher, right?
Fifth and sixth, and I can tell you, like, the fourth grade class had no authority figure last year, and they ran it, and I have kids that, so we have to do the whole worksheet? Yeah. We only did like 5 problems last year. No. It's totally new now, and just trying to establish those new rules.
Yeah.
And if those don't get established early, then your whole year's a wash. Because you're making up what should have been, and if even 1 year of poor is bad.
What's interesting, sometimes talk to administrators or people who get to see the same kids in different classes, different teachers, like at high school, junior high level, is that, you know, sometimes, you know, a teacher will, this kid is crazy and they're doing this and they're this, but the principal will say, well, when they're in so-and-so's class, they're doing their work and they're not doing all these things. So what's going on? And so there is this, you have to establish the what's acceptable or not, and whatever power you don't hold on to, that's, they're gonna grab that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had it a lot with, I've heard a lot with COVID, with not necessarily here, but in other communities where they've been at home most of last year instead of in the classroom and doing it through Zoom, they're struggling. Because they had all this extra time and they could do whatever they wanted, and now they're expected to sit and do this and follow directions, and they can't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost like you're, I mean, when you think about long term, you think of the long term of a child's life is that you're you know, if parents, if we function and don't parent at all or in the right way, you know, it's almost like crippling for life, you know,
yeah.
for school, for jobs, for government, for law enforcement. It's just they've not learned how to interact, how life works. How
you're really doing them like a disservice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If I don't, as a teacher, if I don't teach what I'm supposed to, I am doing you a disservice when you get to the next level.
Yes.
And then nation, I mean, on the large scale, you just see how, you know, when parenting and the family falls apart, nothing else is going to work the way that it should.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It has to, that's the basic block. If you can't function within a small, you live together, mm-hmm. people have different roles, this is how we survive.
Yeah.
If you can get that right, then you can build all sorts of things,
mm-hmm.
in government and school and jobs. Mm-hmm. But when that doesn't work, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to a one of our contractors here, and I think Steve Stanwyck brought him in, you know, for me to introduce him to me, and I found out that he works for, you know, Evergreen Construction, but before that he had his own construction company in Marion, and it was going great guns for a long time. And he said, "This is what happened. I had 22 Mennonites working for me, and they were awesome. Showed up on time, did not complain, they did the work, and then one member of their church started their own construction company, and they all ended up working for him. So I had to hire a new group of people, and I just couldn't get the jobs done anymore." Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense, you know, if you're a Mennonite, right? You are, by definition, very submissive. I mean, when you're willing to obey church teaching down to the clothes that you wear and the way you wear your facial hair,
mm-hmm.
You know, there is kind of a disposition to obey authority. And there was a certain prospering that took place because of that. But when that was lost, you know, his company, you know, fell apart. So you kind of see... You see some of the long-term consequences of not being authority that way, but why do you suppose the culture is moving in this direction? Where that's acceptable, right? We've always known that kids want to rebel and stuff like that, but now it's more accepted, celebrated.
Discipline is hard, and it's not fun. You have to discipline a child. It's not, a joy, but it's needed. I mean, give them instruction that keeps them on a understanding who's an authority and why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And culturally, we come to a place where, well, sorry, we don't spank kids or we don't discipline kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
psychologists say it's terrible for them, right?
You have parents now who weren't disciplined as kids. They've never seen it done. They don't even know what to do. And if they have no regard for the Bible, what it teaches, then they don't know where to go. They don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen it done wrongly, and they shift in a complete other direction.
Yeah.
I think, too, to a degree, social media, like, is a big thing in our culture now. So a lot of, like, I've seen at least a lot of, like, influencers, like, teaching that way of parenting, of, like...
Mm-hmm.
And that on social media gets a lot of praise of, like, you know, this video of this dad just sitting by his little girl as she throws a fit and, like, oh, well, he was so patient with her. But he wasn't disciplining her. That's what it came down to, but that's not how it was portrayed. It was portrayed as, like, a good thing that he let her throw a tantrum and get it out. Right. Yeah. And so I think part of that, too, as, like, from a generation that's been brought up with social media, when it's not just like what you see in your immediate circle anymore, it's what other parents are doing too.
Yeah.
Well, then why wouldn't I do this type of parenting or whatever, you know?
And they don't have like the selfie, you know, get your kid over your lap about spanking, how to give instruction. She's contrite. You know. doesn't play well on Instagram, right?
I also think there's a difference between like punishment and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy just to ground your kid and say, give me your phone, versus like having the tough conversation of why it was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so that's good. What are some other reasons why it's kind of moving this direction?
I think there's a humanistic psychology side to things.
Okay.
You know, it's damaging the kid's psyche, they become mm-hmm. less creative in the future, things of that nature, if you hit them as a kid. I've heard multiple things about this in recent days, so.
Okay.
Even just deeper than that, just what is man, you know, right. Man is basically good.
Yeah.
Punishment for wrong or judgment for wrongdoing is basically bad, except for mass murderers or, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, there's these underlying just assumptions about life that to face them for your kids is sometimes comes too close to the parents, I think, where they don't want to recognize that. Mm-hmm. Does that mean I have to?
Yeah.
Good.
Even the language has changed. Like, mm-hmm. I think, like, I obviously, we're going to have a baby in December, so I've been doing a lot of research, you know, and so, like, but one of the words that is used often is like, they just have big feelings. that's like a term. Like, they have little people with big feelings. You know, no, they're throwing a fit. You know, like, but they don't use that.
She doesn't stand.
They don't use, like, the language being used to describe the behavior is even changing from a psychological standpoint. It's no longer that that's a negative behavior, they're throwing a fit. It's they're having big feelings.
You know, it would be interesting if you, these psychological, you know, these parents who, you know, tell you how you need to raise your kids, I would love to see their children. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I think that there's a detachment from the people who are instructing you on kids and how they, because if you were to see their children, would we still say, well, I know the studies suggest this, but I see how you're raising your kids and they're terrible. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's a distance there between the experts and the community. No?
I was going to say, is it easier to raise kids because there's less interaction? Like, 50 years ago, there wasn't TV and video games. Mm-hmm. And so you had to, like, eat dinner with your kids every night.
Yeah.
And so if your kid is annoying, you're going to deal with it, right? But now it's like, go watch TV and go play video games for 5 hours in the evening. And I don't have to deal with you, right?
Even less interaction than that in a lot of times.
Yeah.
Either they aren't with their parents, they're only with one parent, a lot of kids are with a grandparent.
Yeah.
So the parents might be gone completely, or, you know, it's a vast minority of mm-hmm. kids in the ICF, the 1,000 high schoolers, that live with their biological mom and dad.
Yeah.
That's a very small number of kids.
Like, remember Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you know, which is kind of a commentary on kids? you have Mikey TV, right? You would watch TV all the time. Or you remember growing up, I mean, I grew up in the 80s. I mean, I wasn't around my parents because I was just with my friends mm-hmm. all the time, right? There was a lot of detachment. So I think parents have always tried to find ways to not engage their kids growing up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's interesting, I think the perception has changed. And I think part of it is there's so many broken homes now. On an unreal scale, I think the out-of-wedlock birth rate and the in-wedlock birth rate is close to even now. So there's a lot of, we don't want to hurt people's feelings, right? We don't want to feel like their family is any less than another family, right? There's all kinds of different families. And so there's almost this deconstruction of having a biological mom and dad as your primary caregivers. Like, that can't be the only family structure that works, right? So that's not the starting point anymore. Mm-hmm. And raising people in that environment, because too many people are outside of that. So I think that might be another element that contributes to this. Any other thoughts?
When I was in college, I have a degree in sociology and a minor in psych, so that was a lot of what we studied in.
Uh-huh.
Just to see the medication rates mm-hmm. for children.
Yeah.
Not that some of that's not valid, but a lot of that is to, like, mask behavioral issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I worked in a school with the special ed kids, so many more of them were medicated.
Mm-hmm.
And they come from a broken home, and a lot of it was most likely disciplinary, but they just, you know, would put them on this medication to mute that behavior or to water it down.
Yeah.
And so I think too, as we become more of a culture that medicates easily,
yes.
You see that.
It's
morning.
Very much the brave new world, the type of, you know, you medicate, everyone takes their pills.
Yep.
To chemical lobotomies.
You know, I worked several times, several summers and times with the mental health programs. I remember up in Topeka, and a lot of the workers there were, they'd see these crazy kids. They need meds, they need this med, they need that med. You know, they need parents, basically, but.
Yeah.
What was that book that we read, we listened to? It was about where they took pills every morning so they couldn't feel, so they,
The giver.
The foster kids we had, like, I just opened the medicine cabinet and they would.
Oh.
They were just fed
like
pills
just fed
constantly.
Wow.
But yeah, and we tried to get them off the medication. I mean, the doctors were even just, no, like, she has to have that. She has to have it. But it was that bad. Oh, when they first came to us.
Yeah.
I mean, you would just open the door and they knew.
Yeah, I think a lot of times that the idea of medication will solve it is like they're inherently good, right? Children are inherently good. There are some things that are broken that can be fixed with medication. It's not their fault they're this way.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this is the rising tide of secularism, which doesn't necessarily impact the general population, but it does impact, like when you look at the elites, the academics, people in that upper influential realm are overwhelmingly secular. And their advice, which fuels pop culture and everything, is shaping a lot of the way we are to look at children, right? And I do think it's satanic that Satan wants parents to have diminished influence in their children's lives so that he can use his other instruments to shape and guide and mold the children, right? So kind of like what I talked about last week from behind the pulpit was parenting is countercultural. And overall, how does this view of parental authority, right, impact the child's view of divine authority?
That God's there to cater for their needs and not...
And God's there to cater for your. God's there
to cater
for,
for our needs instead of us being His instruments.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody else has something. Yeah.
I think when you look at a lot of people, see their fathers as not good people, you know, because they left or they just absent or just mean. And so then that you say, "Well, God, your father." Well, they have that.
Yeah,
kind of like
there's
well,
a connection.
Say, well, that you know. You know, so they must be oppressive or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the major things that's emerging from our modern culture is men are not good.
Yeah.
Right? Toxic masculinity, right? Men are not good. Which can be translated to, my father abused me. I mean, there's just, it's rare that you see a portrayal of a good man as a good father. That's why the movie The Quiet Place, if you ever saw that one, was super interesting because the dad is clearly the hero in that movie, right? And so that's almost countercultural, which is why I think that movie resonated with so many people, so they're not used to seeing men portrayed in that way. But I think what it comes down to is, you know, when we talk about a high view of God, what do we mean? In your own words, what's a high view of God?
It's above us, even if we disagree with it.
Yeah.
Like we submit to the word, we don't force it to fit into what we like, or we
don't
throw out parts that we don't like.
Exactly. I mean, right, God is up here, we're down here. We come to Him on His terms, not our terms. And if we have a problem with it, it's our problem, not His, right? That's essentially the high view of God. And for children, their first introduction to authority is done through their parents. right? How they see authority is shaped by how they see their parents. And ultimately, when it comes to you know, this day and age, I mean, one of the questions that people ask is, you know, who put you in charge? Right? Who put you in charge? You're trying to oppress me. I can't breathe. I can't. I mean, is they don't want to be bound by anything other than their own perceptions and experiences. Like, I read a book review. I didn't read the book. I read about a book where that was explaining that biblical inerrancy and teachings and biblical authority are vestiges of white patriarchy, because the game's rigged against you know, this scholar who's a black woman. Right? And so we kind of have this idea of, like, what's your objection? Well, I don't like what it teaches, and so I'm going to interpret it in light of my experience, right? And so that's kind of been the prevailing thing, is the diminishment of all authority. You know, you are your own authority. You kind of create your own reality. And when somebody from the outside comes in and says, no, you don't, people rage against it. And that's why you look at, you know, Paul, he wrote about Jesus that every knee should bow, in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, right? There is an ordering of the relationship. Right? Jesus is king, we are his subjects, we bow our knee, we confess that he's the Lord, that he's in charge. And so, like when you look in Paul's teaching, Paul was teaching, I think, in a relatively ordered world, right? Fathers were clearly in charge of the family. And if anything, he had to maybe soften their influence and their control. But his teaching is very hierarchical, right? Where God is clearly in charge. And when you look at how God constructs the family, it's the fathers, you know, the husbands and the wives, then the children. And in various places, specifically Colossians 3 and 4 and Ephesians 5 and 6, he gives what's called a household code. This is how God wants your household ordered. And this type of family structure and relationship and guidance is something that's really a building block, I think you mentioned, for all society, right? And like even in the church is viewed as a family of families. And so how children learn how to operate in that will help them learn how to operate in the church, broader society, and ultimately, you know, in God's kingdom, that we are under his authority. And so if I were to just summarize you know, Paul's teaching, it's to children is, you've got to know your place. Mm-hmm. You've got to know your place. You know your place in relationship to your parents, in relationship to your government, in your relationship to your Lord. Okay? So we'll look at some of Paul's teachings specific to the family, and then we're going to go ahead and transition to Paul's teaching in relationship with family and the church. And so I mentioned Ephesians 6, 1 through 4, and Colossians 3, 20 through 21. They overlap with some slight differences. He's talking about household codes. And when we get to Ephesians, previously Paul talks about walking in step with the Spirit. You know, do not be drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit. To be filled with the Spirit is to be under the Spirit's control. It means that you submit to the people who God wants you to submit to. It's having a rightly ordered relationship with the Lord that's demonstrated by a rightly ordered relationship in the home. And so after he talks about that, he brings up, you know, that great passage on marriage, right? Husbands, love your wives. You know, wives, be subject to your own husbands. And it's supposed to be kind of a, you know, beautiful harmony of rightly ordered relationship that mirrors Christ in the church. Then after that, he turns his directives to the relationship between children and the parents. So somebody want to read 6, 1 through 4? Seth, you want to get that?
Children, obey your parents in the Lord where this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord.
Okay. So note how Paul addresses children directly. Okay. And one of the patterns we're going to see is that Paul's pattern in this is he addresses the wives first, then the husbands, the children first, and then the parents, and then specifically the father. Then he addresses the slaves first, or the servants. And it's very common for there to be a servant in the household, and then the master, right? So three different sets of commands, but it all goes, you know, so one for the, what we call the subordinate party, and then the other one for the authoritative party, who happens to be ultimately the same one, you know, the male head. So, I mean, why do you think Paul addresses children directly? Right, you're in the Ephesian church, you got a letter from Paul, you know, you're kind of doing this, or counting how many times he says the word God, and, you know, you're doing whatever you do as a kid, and then all of a sudden you hear children. What do you think, Andy? What do you think?
It's a direct command to children, so I mean, it's easy to understand, it's clear,
yeah,
it's directly to them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
It says, children, obey your parents.
Children, yeah. That will soon become one of your favorite passages.
Very much so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, he addresses them, yeah, directly. Now, what does that demonstrate about how God views them? This is really interesting.
He's responsible for their sin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's responsible for their sin. Does that accord with what we normally think? What's the general consensus?
Well, generally there's this, kids can't do whatever it is that you're wanting them to do. It's like that way with sex. Oh, well, they're going to do it no matter what you just say, mm-hmm. or whatever the issue is. Well, that's just the way kids are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kids.
Throwing
they can't
tantrums.
Control.
Like, throwing tantrums is part of, it's just part of that stage. And
uh-huh.
Can't expect otherwise or whatever.
Yeah.
Or it's everybody else's fault that this kid is, you know, like it's the parents' fault or it's society's fault. Like the fault never lies on the kid or
yeah.
what they do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's really interesting. Paul clearly holds children responsible for their behavior. Okay? So what two commands does he give the children? First one is
obey.
Second one is
honor.
Now, what's the difference between, you know, previously he tells wives to submit, and it's if you're a grammar nerd, it's middle voice, right? You submit yourself to your husband. So he uses that word there, but he uses a different word for obey in verse 1. What's the difference between submit and obey? It's kind of might seem like splitting hairs, but what do you think?
There's an attitude behind submission.
Okay.
There's putting yourself lower than another person, whereas obeying is just doing an action.
Okay.
You choose to submit, to put yourself under someone, but obeying is not really a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what would happen if, let's say, Paul used the same word for wives submit to your husbands and children submit to your parents? What would be the problem with that? How would that be taken the wrong way?
Because the wife is a partner in that relationship,
mm-hmm.
differently from the children. The children are the offspring and the ones that
mm-hmm.
are being instructed and taught, whereas the wife isn't necessarily being instructed and taught,
mm-hmm.
but she's a partner in this organization.
Yeah. So if you were to have obey and obey used, what would be the problem there?
Okay.
You can obey without a good attitude or
mm-hmm.
good intentions.
Yeah.
It's like a giving up of something. I don't want to say authority, but something along those lines. Like, you know, the wife is giving up her
mm-hmm.
control over her own actions, I guess, whereas the children shouldn't have control to begin with.
Yeah. You're going to say something, Becky?
Yeah, I mean, the nature of the relationship is different in the sense of, you know, hierarchy versus partnership. Mm-hmm. A husband is not in authority over his wife in the way that a father is over his child. It's just different, like, which is why women need to put themselves under, whereas a parent is to bring the child under submission.
Yeah.
A husband is never to bring his wife under submission.
Yeah, that's a very key point.
Right, and so, then the purpose of it is so different, where in the one case it's just God just designed it this way, that this is the male expression of the image of God, this is the female expression. And with parents and child, it's different because eventually a child's going to grow up to be a parent. A wife is never going to become a husband. So there's a training and an imparting of a superior knowledge, a superior wisdom, and the ways of God.
Yeah.
That does not happen from husband to wife, but does happen from wife and husband to children.
Yeah. Yes, and beware of the pastor or church that confuses that. If they say obey, obey in the same way, I mean, yeah, I've heard of some pastors who advocate spanking your wife for disobedience, right? And
what?
Yeah, I love your look. Ben's not getting away with that. No way, right? But you know what I'm saying? Obedience is clear. Like, there's a reason for it. They're not capable of making their own decisions, right? So they have to be under authority and kind of live there, where. And I always say, I mean, the Bible never says wives, husbands, subject your wives, right? You're not to bring your wives under your authority. Women have to willingly give them the gift of leadership. And so if I ever talk to a man and says, yeah, my wife won't do what I say, I'm like, well, I mean, you teach her the scriptures and you let the Lord work on her. You know, that's not your job to force her into compliance. She has to give that to you. And if she doesn't, you know, you're not responsible to the Lord for her behavior. But that's a different conversation when my kids won't obey me. I won't say, well, you know, it's their choice, and until they willingly submit themselves to you, I mean, you're not responsible for their behavior. I can't have that same conversation, right? Because you are. It's like, the reason why is you haven't put them under your authority. But that is not a way a husband should relate to his wife. Okay, is that clear? So just a little qualification. I don't know, none of you guys would do that. Yeah. Kind of shocked by that. So what does it mean to honor your father and mother? So we talked about obey, right? Basically, it's compliance. What about honor?
I think that's the attitude part two as well.
Yeah.
Where you just hold them in high esteem, because if you look at that verse 3 following, honor your father and mother, it says that it may go well with you and live long in the land. That's a commandment with a promise, what it says, that this holding your parents in high esteem just as you do your heavenly father will go well with you, and that's a choice that you make.
Yeah, it's good.
But be respect also.
Yeah, respect.
Because you can obey your parents but not respect them.
True. You guys ever seen that?
Yeah.
And what ultimately happens when somebody obeys but doesn't respect?
The idea or the knowledge of what submission is doesn't have a full impact on the lives of the girl. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, you're a robot. Taking hold of your actions and practicing self-control are out the window. It's not implied.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't respect them, then you don't learn to obey. You just feel like you're forced to obey.
Yeah. And that makes a bigger deal than, like, the teenage years. Yeah. Right? If we don't have the respect of your kids, it's a lot more than the commanders. Somebody has something over here.
I was just going to say that then if you are obeying without respect, then you will become embittered and resentful. So that's building in them.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very true. I mean, and so it's kind of interesting. It's we teach obedience, right? And usually that's done through spanking and stuff. But how, I mean, as parents, I mean, how do you facilitate honor? A lot of times you talk about drilling in obedience to young kids, but how do you drill in honor?
I think it helps to do it by example. If you show your spouse honor in front of your kids, then you'd like to think that they would catch on to what's happening, and they then respect their parents when they're asked to do something.
That's an excellent point.
Especially, I think, when you have parents that are close to divorce, they're not getting along, then there's no honoring each other at all.
Yeah.
And you don't, you sit there and as a kid you watch that, and then it's easy to not respect people.
So true.
Joe, did you have something? Somebody raise your hand back here. How do you teach your kids honor?
I would say too, the maintaining the priority of the spouse relationship, in that you stand up for the honor of your spouse to your kids. Mm-hmm. So when the father hears the children not honoring the mother, or the mother hears the children not honoring the father, you hold them to account that you're not going to speak that way or act that way about my wife, not your mother. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this idea that that's not acceptable, that's not honoring, it's not what God desires. And just specifically saying, you will do this, you'll act this way, you won't act this way, that's the way that you honor. That goes along with that, because many times they will naturally push against that, and they're not naturally honoring. So it's just like anything, they have to learn what it looks like, what it's like to honor.
Yeah.
We have indications in scripture that honoring is not something that ends with the end of childhood, that you're obligated to honor your parents by caring for them all the way to the grave, and that therefore we are still honoring our parents in front of our children. And just this idea that for your entire time walking this planet, I am your parent, and you're to honor me just like my parent is my parent, and we're to honor them. We're to invite them to holidays cheerfully. We're to, you know, I mean, all the things that go along with showing honor to sometimes people who are hard to honor. That is actually training our children to see us all their life as people worthy of honor and respect because we're their parents.
Yeah.
Because we took care of them, because, you know. So yeah, I mean, being people that they would want to honor, and then also just showing them.
Yeah.
They're watching.
Yeah.
They know how we talk about our mother-in-law, who is their grandma.
Yes. Yeah. Other thoughts?
Like when kids go to different parents for, they try to get away with something, that doesn't show honor to them, and like vice versa for your spouse. So they come to me because mom wouldn't let them. That's not honoring. It's not showing your wife honor. And teaching them to honor. When you say, oh yeah, I know mom. Yeah, she's kind of whatever. She doesn't like that, but I guess you should.
Yeah.
I don't know, I've seen that a lot, like with different parents. And
that got wrath in our house. You went to your father, and then you came to me for a different answer.
Double the discipline.
Oh, yeah.
Now, your mom will discipline you, and your father will. Yeah, it's, I think the other thing, too, is just, you got to teach them what is honoring behavior and what's not honoring behavior.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Dad. I mean, I obeyed. Well, you did that with a terrible attitude, right? Or, okay, ask me that question again. State your objection again in a respectful way. So there is some, when you honor people, this is what it looks like to honor them. And you can't just expect kids to know. But I think the other thing, too, is if you live an honorable life, it's going to be a lot easier for them to want to honor you. Do you know what I'm saying?
And I think it teaches them, like, long-term how to honor the Lord as well. Like,
yeah,
I think coming from a small town, like, anytime I'd leave the house, I wasn't Miranda, I was a Harrison. And so, like, there was a representation of the household in the way that your behaviors reflected your parents. And so, honoring that, just as when into adulthood, your behaviors are going to honor the Lord or represent the Lord if that's what you are proclaiming your actions are going to.
Yeah.
Either honor them or and respect the Lord or not. Yeah. And so, yeah.
And it's true. We bring up to our kids, you brought shame to our family.
Yeah, it's a great lesson too for them to realize that, you know, should they be believers and join a church, that their behavior reflects
yep.
upon the church, it reflects upon Christ. And
yep.
so at a very young age, you know, your actions speak to everyone about our family, it reflects upon us. And so you can honor us or dishonor us
yeah.
just in the same way that...
When you see honor in contrast with shame,
mm-hmm.
right? A foolish son is a
shame
mm-hmm. to their father, right? You embarrass your parents, right? And so part of honoring is learning not to embarrass your parents. So, Josh, you got something you're gonna say?
Oh, yeah. Just all that. I was just thinking, why do soldiers have and fail to have allegiance to their country
mm-hmm.
and to honor their country by, you know, service to fight? And it's because they've been brought up in that security and love. And being provided for.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I just think the same way as a child coming up, they know and feel that their
mm-hmm.
parents love, like, what they do for their child is all out of love.
Mm-hmm.
And what they stand for and implement it in the child's life is all out of love. So the child carries that, wants to honor, wants to make
yeah.
proud, wants to stand
yeah.
up for it.
Yeah. I mean, it's and honoring is something that goes on for the rest of our lives. So, I mean, it's something for you guys to think about, too. It's just, how well are you honoring your parents? Speaking well of them? And it's something like having kids to really humble you. You realize, wow, okay, yeah, I'm going to walk back every criticism I had as a teenager. What did I know? Right? So we'll go ahead and wrap it up there. Let me pray, and then we'll do the next part of worship. Well, Father, I do thank you for you know, just the clarity of your word, and I pray that our children will just know their place and that we will help them to know it in a very kind, compassionate way. I pray this in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen.